Good afternoon, folks. You're listening to Aggie Radio. I'm Jake Grossman, and this is Mindfulness on Air. So if you've been listening last couple weeks, we have our weekly show talking about mindfulness and meditation and just kind of what that is and how helpful it can be. Mindfulness is a way of paying attention to the present moment by using meditation, yoga, and breathing techniques. It involves consciously bringing awareness to our thoughts and feelings without making judgments about them. It is a method for observing what is happening right now in our bodies, minds, and the world around us. And so it's a very, very helpful tool that can be specific to help with certain things we're facing, whether it's stress, anxiety, a lot of benefits, mindfulness. But then it can also be a lot more deeper, an actual path in and of itself, a practice of meditation. And it can be in formal settings of sitting meditation. It can be in yoga, as I just mentioned, different breathing techniques, different access points to be able to be aware, centered, and grounded to help live an intentional, awake, and aware life. And so it's helpful because not very often we're just here, noticing what's happening. We're chasing after the next thing, trying to catch happiness, trying to run away from our stress, instead of just looking at it directly, which can be scary, and just noticing kind of what it is and what's happening, where we feel it inside our bodies, our connection with the world, with others. It's just very helpful for being present. And being present, again, helps us be grounded and see what's actually happening as it is without layering on our judgments and labels about it. So it's helpful to, I imagine most people kind of know that feeling when we're being pushed forward, constantly meeting deadlines, being rushed about, that confused anxiety feeling, stressed out. It's very helpful to just kind of take some moments, whether formally or, as we'll see and talk about, informally. Can just be very ordinary experiences that allow us to be present. And what that does is kind of allows the mind to settle like a glass of muddy water, instead of forcing things to turn out a certain way, instead of trying to make things happen, instead of running away from it or wishing there weren't. We can't really force that water to become clear. But when we just set the glass down, when we just allow the dirt, the mud, the rocks to settle, they just settle into place and the water becomes clear. So I use that analogy because it's just like the mind. We have so many things, and they can be wonderful things, wonderful deadlines, wonderful obligations, responsibilities. We may enjoy our jobs, our school, our families. These can be very helpful and good things, but lots of times, when we're not really slowed down and present enough, we can't enjoy what we already have. And so there's that kind of confused, jumbled feeling that sometimes. And so it's helpful to find whatever it is to help you settle in. It can be sitting meditation, can be yoga, can just be taking walks, can be writing poetry, just what helps us. You probably already do this. You may just call it time out or me time or just kind of relax to reset, to recharge. And that allows the mind to settle, to kind of see what's there, appreciate what we have, what's available. And it helps us to be a little bit more effective, to see clearly about things that we can control, to make changes if we need to. I'm not just saying we just sit back and relax and just meditate away or just be present, don't worry about anything. But we won't know appropriate actions to take or when to just be with something if we don't allow that clarity to just arise. What's already here when we just kind of let some things go a little bit. And so once again, this is another special weekly hour, not because you get to hear me again, but because we have another wonderful guest on. I have on Michael Souder, who's a professor in English here at USU, and many, many other things, helped establish, or did establish, Sangha. We'll talk about it a little bit. A meditation group here in the Valley that you can check out. He's also the advisor to the Meditation Club. I don't know if you guys have heard, but there is a meditation club here on campus. On hiatus right now for the summer. You can still tune into the radio show, obviously. We will be back in the fall. So he's the very wonderful, elusive Michael Souder, and great practitioner, poet. I could just go on talking, and I'm not in any of his classes, so I'm not right now, so I'm not just trying to get a good grade or anything. Just a wonderful person that I love talking with, and that's the most amazing thing to me, is very accessible, approachable, takes that time to really help somebody with their life, with their practice, whether it's meditation, just whatever's coming up for them. It's been a very, very wonderful, positive impact on my life, and so it's a great honor to have you here today. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jake. Hello out there, everybody, and thanks so much for having me on this show.
You're very welcome. It's great to have you here. And so what I typically like to start off with is, you know, I've read this fancy little definition, kind of just a working definition, working hypothesis of what mindfulness and meditation is, but that can be too narrow sometimes. It's helpful because we know what this guy is on here yakking about. But at the same time, it's really an open area that can just catapult us into being present with life. Many things that it can be a very deep practice in and of itself, or it can just be a skill or a tool. And so, that being said, what does meditation mean to you?
Okay, thank you, Jake. You know, the introduction that you gave a couple minutes ago was so beautiful and covered so many things. I remember that Henry David Thoreau in Walden, he says that the thing that we most crave more than anything else is reality. You know, we just crave to be in touch with reality. And a lot of us who practice things like rock climbing or different kinds of sports, one of the things that's so satisfying about these activities, especially something like rock climbing, where, you know, your life is kind of at stake and you've got to bring this tremendous focus to what you're doing. And it's a kind of wordless kind of concentration and focus. You know, you're not telling yourself, now I need to put my hand on this hold. But, you know, you're just like working with your body, and your mind is in this different space where it's not using language all the time. I mean, my profession is one in the English department. I'm a writer, so I'm always dealing with language. And so I really love to be in a kind of activity or space where my mind is not using language all the time. It's very rejuvenating. And, excuse me. So, you know, rock climbing, a kind of sport like that, is a kind of meditation. It's a place where our mind shifts, and we're not just using words all the time, and we're not worrying about the future. We're not regretting what we did or what happened in the past. We're just really focused on where's the next hold, you know. And so there are a lot of activities that people love, and these activities require a lot of mindfulness. And mindfulness is what meditation is fundamentally about, really being present with the reality in which you're sitting or standing or working or playing, rather than doing one action and your mind is somewhere else. You just bring all your focus to the moment, to what you're doing. So I just thought that was a great introduction you gave for what meditation is. The cool thing about meditation is that it facilitates our life working in so many ways. It helps us physically. There have been a lot of studies done on the physiology of meditation. It helps us mentally. Similar studies have been done. It really helps us emotionally. It helps us work through emotions when emotions come up. It helps us to work with emotions so that they're not overwhelming. And it also can really deepen our spiritual life. And And when you ask, what is meditation to me, I have to fundamentally say that for me, it's a spiritual practice. You know, when my mind gets really quiet, when I'm doing formal meditation, you know, I feel like I'm in touch with something greater than myself. I feel like I'm in touch with this great presence. And, you know, it's there are lots of religions that talk about different terms for the divine or for God or for the infinite. But in my meditation practice, I feel very in touch with whatever that is, whatever you want to call that, that greater reality. And so fundamentally for me, meditation is a spiritual practice, but I certainly enjoy and take advantage of the physical, mental, emotional health that comes from meditation as well.
Mm-hmm. And so one thing you mentioned, though, is, but it didn't sound like it was so much a metaphysical thing or an intellectual talking about metaphysics. I mean, it still sounded like a very felt quality, this experience that you can experience, mm-hmm. That we can be with. And so on the one level, you mentioned rock climbing or any really activity when we're kind of one with it. We're not thinking about other things. You're just paying attention to what you're doing. It can be very simple things. Can be very enlightening and spiritual things. And so that's helpful. Is it just because the being present, it's a physical activity? This is on the first level I wanted to talk about. Coming to this moment, it's helpful because we pay attention to our breathing, let's say, or the sensations in the body, or we're not even really analyzing it that way. As you said, we're just paying attention to that next rock we got to grab, the next hoop we're trying to make, the next conversation with our loved one. And so is it just really being settled in that activity that brings us to this moment? Mm-hmm. Or is it just more kind of letting go, allowing that to just arise, that space to mm-hmm. be there?
I think that activities can really help us get there, that they can really settle our mind down in a certain way and bring a certain kind of focus to our mind. And, you know, even things like listening to a symphony, you know, our mind quiets down and we become very receptive. Meditation's a very receptive space, I think, for me, that, you know, we have this constant chatter that's going on really on the surface of our mind. So like if you're in the gym and you're working out with weights, you know, your arms get tired, so you put the weight down, you take a rest. So, but it's not like that with our mind. I mean, you know, we're studying for an exam, we've been studying all night, we're so tired, it's like, okay, I'm just, you know, so worn out. But our mind doesn't stop and just rest, it just keeps this chatter going. And so it's kind of like, you know, Jake's metaphor of the glass of water that may have some dirt in it or blemishes in it. Another nice metaphor is kind of like a pond of water that has all these ripples on the top, and you can't really see down to the depths because of all these ripples. And it's kind of like the ripples represent the chattering of our mind that keeps going all the time. We have this surface chatter, it never stops, even when we're dreaming. You know, we have this constant narrative or these stories, our imagination is going crazy. And so, you know, and this surface chatter of our mind is just one level of our experience as a human being. We know that scientists have often reported that they're struggling so hard to understand a concept or a problem, and they're you know, working out equations, and they're talking with friends, and they're reading, and they're doing all this, and then, you know, they lie down for a nap or they take a shower, and boom, suddenly the answer comes. And so, you know, that kind of suggests that this chattering level, surface level of our mind is not the whole story, that when we get quiet, that something else can rise up. And I believe that underneath that surface chatter, we have this huge resource of creativity, of insight, of wisdom, that when we quiet down the surface chatter, then we have access to these deeper parts of ourselves. And so it's another wonderful thing about meditation. I mean, so many times I'm struggling with some kind of a problem, and just sitting in my morning meditation, quieting my mind without even thinking about the problem, suddenly there appears a solution or a possible answer. And so, and that's why one school of meditation is called insight meditation, Vipassana meditation, because these insights, they just come up. It's like the poet Pablo Neruda, if you've ever seen the film Il Postino, one of my very favorite films, he's talking to this young postman about being a poet. And he says, well, how do I become a poet? And he says, well, just go walk on the beach and see what happens. And the postman says, so you mean these metaphors that they will just come to me? And Neruda says, yes, they arise spontaneously. And so it's kind of like that, that when we can quiet this the superficial chattering of our mind, then this other stuff has a chance to come into our presence. And so to me, it's just fantastic. It's not really a miracle, but it's astonishing anyway.
Right. And so kind of going along with that, the metaphor of the water, it's also like the ocean. We talk about how it can be very, the storms of life, the storms either in our mind or just the chaos around ourselves, and can really blow us around, topple us over in more ways than we can imagine. But if we, you know, kind of got upset at the waves, if we said water, I never want to see it again, if we only thought it was just that, the storms, the choppy water, or we just focused only on, you know, that chaotic negative area, we kind of miss out that we can just, there's a whole depth to it, enough room for huge whales to gracefully dance around, move around underwater. It's getting a little anthropomorphic, but there's this huge depth where it's calm, where it's open. And so you mentioned lots of times working on a problem, and then your morning meditation just helps with the solution or allows that creativity to just rise. But also one thing I notice in my practice, when I'm working with these problems, when I sit to meditate or to just be, it kind of, a lot of the times, they just weren't really problems. I was turning them into
absolutely
problems in my mind, or I was focusing on it from an unproductive point of view. You name it. It can just be anything that's not really serving to you, to one. And it kind of just allows me to, you know, not run away, not ignore it, not just say, oh, okay, and just think happy thoughts, but kind of just hold it in my hands in front of me. And sometimes it's just not even that big of a deal. Lots of times it is, and there are solutions that may arise, but lots of times it seems like just being with some things allow that shift, allow it to just, we either appreciate it, we either realize, I mean, even the most painful and the most suffering we go through can be a catalyst to something greater, to a depth, a true depth of joy or contentment that isn't so much susceptible to, you know, the conditions that cause that to be shifted around. It's not based so much on conditioned things being a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that the metaphor of the water, there's this whole stillness that can kind of just speak to us. And a lot of times, if we just be with some things, you know, we can be surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminds me of a wonderful practice, which I love to do. It's not easy, but it's very powerful and effective. And that is, it's called drop the storyline and go into the feeling. And so, like, you know, if somebody has slighted you or somebody has, you know, said something that really hurt your feelings, I'm sure you've had this happen to you where, you know, you can't let go of it. You just keep going over it and over it and replaying it in your mind and thinking about
like
what
I'll
I should have
said. Like, exactly. I'll fix it by, if I only would have said this.
Right, exactly. Right. I should have said this, and next time I'm going to say that, and I'm going to get back at them. And, you know, we just keep going over it and over it and over it. And it's kind of like this endless kind of obsessive tape that keeps going through our mind. And it's interesting to think about that, because the obsessive quality, you know, usually we start to do something obsessive when there's some kind of core of fear. that is happening that we're trying to avoid. And very often what we're trying to avoid in a situation like this is feeling hurt, you know. Somebody said something, hurt my feelings, but I don't really want to just feel that hurt. It's easier for me to plan and think about it and go over it. And so this great practice is drop the storyline, you know, drop the whole tape about who did what to who and how unfair it was and how I'm going to get back at him and all that. Just drop the story and go into the feeling. And so you just get your mind quiet and you just think, you know, how does this really feel? What is the reality that's happening for me right now in this moment? And, you know, usually you can not only start to feel the underlying emotion, but you can often isolate it in a certain part of your body, you know. So like if we feel anger, sometimes like that's in the back of our neck, or if we feel fear, it could be in our gut. If we feel sorrow, it's often in our heart, chest area. And so the practice is to you know, just sink down into the feeling. And just feel it, locate it in your body, and then just breathe into this feeling. And this goes back to what you were saying, Jake, about sometimes you just hold something, and then it's no longer a problem. And I've found in doing this particular meditation practice that when you just sit with a feeling like that, even though it's uncomfortable, even though you don't like it, nobody wants to feel those feelings, if you just let them be and you just kind of, you know, hold them, kind of embrace that feeling, hold it in your hands, that the feeling tends to dissolve. And it dissolves usually pretty quickly. And then you find that you have a different perspective about the situation. And instead of this obsessive tape going round and round, actually, you've opened up some space where maybe some new insight can come in, and maybe there's a new way of seeing the situation. And so, you know, I think what you said about holding something that seems to be a problem, sometimes it's no longer a problem, or you discover a new way of dealing with it instead of just our typical habitual reactive state that we tend to go into.
Nice. Yeah, that's very, very helpful, because one, like we've already talked about, that just directly brings you into what is actually happening physically. So that's one part. I'm just going to break this apart a little bit. Is that's a felt quality that is kind of reciprocates. Not only are we trying to drop the story, but by doing that, of where we feel that, then helps you be present, because the physical reality, what you're feeling, is only happening right now. I mean, we have memories of what we have felt or what the sensations were, you know, and we can anticipate. But really, our breath, our feelings, the physical feeling, the sensations, are only happening right now. So again, that's the perfect segue to allow us to be present. And then it also helps us to be with what is. We're noticing, okay, it's a sensation, this is where I feel it, which helps us to be with it as it is. So instead of the thoughts, why did this happen, or fill in the blank, is it can help de-escalate. Because if we're holding tension, if we're angry, and then there's the tension, then that's in our neck or shoulders or whatever, you know, then that's causing pain. And then that's perpetuating this huge entanglement, not only in the mind, but physically now. Now we're seeing how going over the stories and thoughts are now affecting us physically. So that's another wonderful thing that helps us do.
And most of us carry around all this baggage of unprocessed feelings that we never have actually just felt and released.
And that's the next thing I was just going to open up. It's like this airline does not say how many baggage you can keep. Eventually your body will tell you. Unfortunately, in very unhealthy ways, mm-hmm. We've postponed it, and so it's a lot harder to work with things instead of kind of noticing what's really there. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, it kind of accumulates, and then that just causes the stress to go up. There's just that more tension. We're not really facing what's there and seeing what's there. And I don't mean in a heroic, you know, you need to face your fears kind of thing, but we just kind of keep running from that, and this monster in the closet, the tension, those thoughts, that story just keeps snowballing, and it just can end up being a lot a lot scarier than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of realizing, oh, it's this painful tension in my body,
mm-hmm.
and these thoughts, this story about it. And that's not so scary. I mean, is it? I mean, it, for those that are listening, I mean, it is scary. It is very challenging to face what we've ran from. But in theory, let's just think about it just logically right now. You know, it's a sensation in our body and thoughts and a story about it. Objectively, we can see that's not so scary.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is we're kind of swept away, and this story has become our subjective experience, a whole reality, which is our reality at that time, but may not be true.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you mentioned, and that's the greatest part of this practice, is it allows us to see what really is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Not only, oh, this is some tension building, obviously I didn't like when somebody said that or this, but it just perpetuates this story, mm-hmm. this internal suffering. Instead of really being with, if it is just being with it, if it is saying, hey, I've never really connected with my body, I've been in my mind, intellectualizing everything or analyzing, it can be a very welcoming or at least homecoming experience by actually being present, by mm-hmm. feeling what you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really like that too, especially mm-hmm. the pointer to reality.
Right.
I mean, how do we get there?
Mm-hmm.
Keep thinking about it, keep doing the things we keep doing to get ourselves into this mess,
mm-hmm.
or do we, you know, try something else? And it's only going to help
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
by using a clear mind.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And meditation is, you know, fundamentally, it takes us to a place of real peace. You know, people talk about the peace that passeth understanding, and we get to this great reservoir of peace and joy and deep, deep kind of satisfaction. But then these storms, like you said, Jake, do arise, and we do have these things that stir us up. And, you know, and so meditation just has a beautiful practice for how to face those storms, how to be really present with the reality that's there. We work through them basically just by feeling the underlying feeling. It eventually dissolves, and then we can move deeper into this place of real peace. And so it's not like meditation, you know, all the time we're struggling with all this negativity. Stuff does come up sometimes, you know, and meditation is a practice of just being present with what is true for you. And sometimes we tend to run away from that because mm-hmm. it seems scary or it seems painful. And you know, sometimes I think it's very interesting that we can be afraid of our own feelings. You know, these feelings are our feelings. They're happening in our body, and it's strange that we can be afraid of them. But it's, I mean, it makes sense. Nobody wants to feel the hurt. But the American poet Robert Frost, he said, you know, the shortest way out is through. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that when you're faced with a situation, you know, go into it and face it rather than trying to run away from it.
Which can be very helpful and very healing, because we realize there is this depth there. There's this grounded, this peace that's there. And so you mentioned it's not just struggling with negativity all the time, but it's also, I'm not trying to say it's just this quick fix and then it's going to fix everything and then life will be great. I like to look at it more as going straight through into it, as you mentioned, is a lot like the eye of the hurricane. There's, in the middle of this chaos, there's still some calm, some peace mm-hmm. there. And getting to that place, which is you, that is you, you have that depth and capability of that peace, that groundedness of who you are, not our stories, not our adjectives describing what we have or our descriptions, but just our felt quality of being home. And like Emily Perry last week mentioned, and being okay in your own skin, loving yourself who as you are, falling in love with who you are. And so it can be very, very deep and healing. But at the same time, that calmness can still be there without everything having to be quote unquote perfect. And that those winds, the chaos, our life still kind of is, it's life. And so that's still there going mm-hmm. around you, mm-hmm. but we can really be centered mm-hmm. and grounded in that deeper experience that meditation really helps a direct path to get to that.
I really like what you said about it not always being a quick fix, because, you know, sometimes we're dealing with some kind of powerful emotion. It's not just what my boss said to me yesterday that I'm really pissed off about and, you know, I can't stop thinking about it. But, you know, sometimes we're dealing with something like the loss of a loved one or the loss of a career or some kind of serious illness that involves a big loss. And so sometimes these emotions, you know, we're not going to open to them in one meditation session and then we're healed from grief or from mourning or from some kind of powerful emotion. But I've found in my own practice that when I'm working through some kind of big loss or some kind of powerful emotion, that, you know, you just work through it a little bit every day. And each time that you really open to it and, you know, touch that suffering that is inside, each time you do that, it's healed just a little bit more, you know, and you just stay open as best you can. I mean, sometimes, you know, you don't want to face some kind of grieving or mourning, and so you skip meditating for a couple weeks or something. But, you know, when you go back with an open heart and with an openness, and, you know, once again, you feel strong enough to touch that place of suffering, each time we touch that with compassion, we're healed a little bit more. And so at meditation, it's not a quick fix, but it is a fix, you know, and it will help us work through not only, you know, what the boss said to me yesterday, but also, you know, the loss of my mother or the loss of my father or something like that. That meditation really helps us to let these powerful emotions move through our body, move through our emotions and through our mind, and really can take us to a place of healing.
One teacher talks about how in the very beginning, this is a huge process, or can, you know, be these ordinary experiences, but as you mentioned, working with it a little bit at a time, one teacher, she mentions how it's kind of just like cracking the door and just peeking. We're not quite ready to unconditionally accept everything. And nothing we're talking about here is even talking about condoning things. We can still be with things and see them as they are without condoning it. But she mentions that you can kind of just crack the door and just peek. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's all you can do. I know that's all I can do some days, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's it. Say, okay, I'm going to kind of be with this, or I don't even know what it is sometimes. I
also
just can't,
like,
even put my finger on it sometimes.
Yeah, I also like the metaphor of just dipping your toes in.
Yeah.
You know, you're just going to dip your toes in and just, you know, because it can feel overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times, like, oh, I have to change this or fix this, and it's going to be like this the rest of my life. It can be very daunting and overwhelming. It can just be like, right now, can I feel this? Can I be open to this emotion? And that's where it was cracking the door and just maybe just putting our foot just right there. And sometimes we have to close it. That's all we can handle. But more and more working with it, being present and allowing it to flow through you, is in a way just more familiarity. One thing, deconditioning our habit to armor ourselves and lock the door, but then also to really be working with it. And eventually we can go from peeking through the crack of the door to, you know, maybe opening it from time to time, to eventually maybe allowing that scary, fearful thing in for tea eventually, which is really just can be another aspect of ourselves. It can
mm-hmm.
be really
one thing that has been really true for me is that when you do deep meditation, you get to a place where you feel this big spaciousness, you feel this big presence. And what I've found in working through powerful, difficult emotions is that, you know, at first it feels very scary. You just put your toes in the water, you open the door a tiny bit. And but as you do that more and more and you go deep into meditation, you know, I eventually have had this sense that there's this spaciousness that is bigger than this feeling, and it's kind of holding this feeling, whereas before it felt like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to open that door because that's too scary, it's overwhelming. But eventually I've gotten to a place where I felt like, wow, you know, I can actually hold this feeling and I can let it move through me because I am bigger, you know, or this place I am is bigger than this powerful emotion. So,
yeah, that's great to just really be there. Would you say it's just from not identifying with it as much that mm-hmm. you're able to say, okay, this is here, but that's not all I am. Mm-hmm. And so would it be just kind of thinking about it logically that way? Or do you think there's a...
I'm not
what
really...
What are some more ways to just allow that space, I guess, is what yeah. I'm getting at, is how can we allow that, enter that? How can we not identify with the small, the narrowness either of a fear or of an emotion or whatever we're saying to ourselves, more to identify with the space or just to relax that identity altogether?
Yeah, it's all incredibly mysterious, really. You know, it's very, it's really hard to know, even when you're going through it. I mean, in one sense, when you fully feel a feeling, you feel very identified with it in a way. But then also, you do feel, you can often feel that this feeling is being held. And so it's really mysterious the way it works. I can't really say if disidentifying with it is the kind of the key or identifying with it is the key. It's a mysterious kind of process, you know. I mean, it's a well-traveled path, and people who have been teaching these meditation techniques have been teaching them for thousands of years, and so they are kind of tried and true. But what is really happening is it still remains a mystery, I think, for us. It's a kind of miraculous mystery.
And it's kind of beyond just talking about it as well, because it's never going to allow you, as much as anybody listening hear us talk about it, you know, that's not the point, and it's not even going to do it. It's kind of just allowing yourself to be there, to dive in and to check it out with an open mind, to kind of just trust yourself with being present and with the path that you can take into being with whatever we come up with, our mm-hmm. limitations, whatever we're working with. It can even be, you know, pleasant things. How can we still see a deeper reality? How can we be with this? So it's okay, I think, that it's a little mysterious, because you know, it's more about that direct feeling, that direct knowing, mm-hmm. that kind of being that, you know, mm-hmm. being that space, instead of, well, if I'm open and I'm more spacious, then I'll feel better.
Mm-hmm,
like, but right. No one's going to feel that. You know, you right. kind of just ease into that. You kind of let go and just kind of sink into that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even, I mean, we've been talking about working with difficult emotions and healing and grieving and things like that. But you know, the same thing happens when something like we feel is really good happens, like you win an award or you get some kind of accolade or something. And, you know, then our mind starts spinning with that and going over how wonderful it was and how great I am. And boy, those people clapped. And, you know, you keep going over that and over that. And it's great. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But again, you know, we just let that happen and we just pay attention to what's happening. And eventually when we have a committed practice, everything settles down again and we get down into this deeper place where we're not, you know, it's still dwelling on the past, and we can get down into a place where we're in the present, and that's where new ideas come from, new creativity, wisdom, insights really come from.
And that joy as well.
Mm-hmm,
that
absolutely.
Just that just being.
Yes.
Because I've noticed with myself a lot of times that positive thing that happened that then allowed me to feel joy.
Mm-hmm.
We then say it was that, and now
right.
I need more of that, or that's what happiness is, because I felt it, and it was because when I had this, or when I thought that, or when this happened, or whatever fill in that blank is. But really, I've come to notice sometimes, not all the time, that those positive things are just triggers. They're like a mirror that shine back, and that joy or that settled, just that well-being we feel that we thought came from something else was there all along, mm-hmm. and it just took a trigger or something. That contentment came from momentarily stop desiring or craving or going mm-hmm. out after the next thing, mm-hmm. and we come back to ourselves. We turn mm-hmm. our senses inward and feel contentment, mm-hmm. but we don't notice that shift. That contentment came from not looking out mm-hmm. and coming within, and we miss that part. But we say it came from when I got that, mm-hmm. when this positive thing happened. But we miss that subtle shift that depth, that joy and calmness can come from internal, that creative mm-hmm. space.
Exactly.
Because we're no longer chasing right. everything out there. We take a moment and go, oh, I can just be.
Right.
But we thought it was the object that made us just
exactly,
be instead of
yeah.
what's here.
And so we get caught on this kind of hamster's wheel of trying to chase something else that's going to help us to feel good. And, you know, one of the wonderful things about practicing meditation is, you know, you not only get into this very deep, peaceful space, but you eventually get to a place where that peace turns into joy. And there's a concept in many meditation traditions, which is called unconditioned joy. And in meditation practice, you get to a place where you feel this unconditioned joy. It's a kind of joy that doesn't really have an outward cause. And so this enables us to not only feel some peace in the eye of the storm, but we can also actually feel joy in the eye of the storm. I mean, if you think of somebody like Mother Teresa, who, you know, worked in the streets of Calcutta, or Thich Nhat Hanh is a Buddhist, Zen Buddhist teacher. The Dalai Lama, you know, he always looks like he's being tickled or something, you know. He's always got this laugh and this smile, even though his country is under occupation. He's the leader of Tibet, was the leader of Tibet. He's been exiled from his country. His people have been tortured and imprisoned and murdered. And I think, I don't know how many thousands of monasteries were destroyed in Tibet by the Chinese. You know, and then you see the Dalai Lama, and he's so full of joy, you know, and yet he's working tirelessly for the Tibetan people, still trying to meet with the Chinese people, lobbying around the world. And, you know, he has this incredible joy that is underneath, or not really underneath, but it's in the midst of this terrible tragedy and suffering that not only he is feeling, but all his people. He's considered the father of his people. And you know, they are all still suffering. Monks are setting themselves on fire in protest to the occupation of Tibet. And yet when you see the Dalai Lama, he looks like he's being tickled, you know. And so that joy, you know, not only, well, my wife and I, my family, we were in India this past summer, and we were in Dharamshala, which is where the Dalai Lama's temple is in northern India. And there's a trail that goes around the Dalai Lama's temple, and you come to this plaza kind of halfway around, and you see there's this big board. I mean, it's kind of like a series of boards, almost like a big fence, that has several hundred pictures of monks and lay people, men and women, who have self-immolated, you know, set themselves on fire in protest to the Chinese occupation of Tibet. And, you know, right above all those faces, the youngest one I saw was like 16 years old, and some of them, there's like a young man beside his mother or a man beside his horse. And then above all these pictures is this picture of the Dalai Lama with that smile that we always see on his face. And, you know, when I first saw that, I thought, now how does that smiling face fit with all these pictures of these immolated, martyred, mostly young people? You know, all these people burn themselves alive in protest to this occupation, and there is the Dalai Lama's face smiling right with all those photos. And at first I thought, how does that fit together? And, you know, fundamentally I came to the kind of conclusion that, you know, his smile is not in response to what's happened, and it's not a kind of denial to what's happened because he works so tirelessly for the Tibetan people. But it comes from this unconditioned joy, this inner joy that exists and thrives even in the midst of the suffering and the chaos and the storms of this life. And so, you know, if the Dalai Lama can find that kind of happiness and joy, given the suffering that he's undergone and his people have undergone, you know, well, all of us here in America, you know, we can probably, well, I can't say get to it quicker or easier, but you know, it's there for us too. It's available for us too. And so, you know, meditation, mindfulness leads us to a place of calm and peacefulness. We can be more better studiers, better writers, better thinkers. But we also deep down can tap into this, not only this reservoir of creativity, but a reservoir of joy as well, that can exist just like the Dalai Lama's joy in the midst of all that tragedy.
Right in the middle of the midst of all that. So very clear seeing that is there and happening, but that's not all that space holds. There's still just his unconditional love, compassion, and joy as well. And I imagine some people, and even myself, it's come up before, well, but he's the Dalai Lama. Of course he's able to do that. But, you know,
he was born that way.
Right? His response has kind of been, it's not a matter of title. It's a matter of practice.
Mm-hmm,
it's a matter of conditioning ourselves. We've been conditioned to habitually react in a certain way. We can crack that door open a little bit if that's all we can. But we can start being with what is, working with it, and it's a matter of practice. This isn't mastery. This isn't magic. We're not trying to perfect anything. It's this open-minded and open-hearted curiosity to ask, what would happen? Who would I have to be without these stories or without locking myself up behind these walls? What would happen if I felt life fully? So that's very powerful sharing that you just
It
brought up. And
it's very moving to me. And, you know, just being in India with my family, my boys are 9 and 11, and our son, Aiden, the 11-year-old, when we got back from India, he said, you know, I made a promise. I'm never going to lie again. And we said, why have you decided you're not ever going to lie again? He said, well, I just saw so much suffering and so many poor people and people who were in such terrible conditions that I just decided I have to be a good person, you know? So it was a very sweet thing he said. Yeah.
Again, some more wise people. Some of our young folks are a little more open to kind of those insights and a little more creative. They haven't, we are just as much too, but they haven't really layered over so many layers on top, saying that, no, you have to do this to be happy, or that's not possible. That joy, or at least the practice, at least the effort and kind of being present and enjoying the journey is possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
So I also wanted to ask, there's many paths. We've talked about different meditations on here, different meditation groups. There's many of the scientific articles for benefits on our website. If you're a student and you're in your MyUSU portal, you can log into MyUSU. And then at the bottom left, there's My Communities. You click on that, and then a list will drop down. It'll show you what you're involved in. It'll say student or communities. If you click on manage communities, that'll bring up a lot of the other clubs and organizations that are around here at USU. And then on the right side, when you go to the USU Meditation Club, there's a folder. You click on join. you have to click join to be able to go in and view it for right now. And then that's when you can hit the folder that says open next to the club name. And then that'll allow you to see not only the scientific benefits, but many other resources, websites, how-to guides for certain types of meditations, all sorts of stuff. I mean, you have to have an A number, so be affiliated with the university in some way to get to that page. But all that information is still available, so if anybody's interested, you can just email usumeditationclub@gmail.com. And that's just a slice of many options. There's different groups that are listed on there of where you can go, different kinds of meditations to try out. I hope we've talked about a few different ideas of ways we can implement this in our daily lives, because we are talking about life. We're talking about just being here with what is. And so I know you've mentioned before about a sangha. It's a group of sangha is a group of meditators, basically in its most basic form. It's a community where you can go and meditate and practice with others, learn. There's lots of people with great experience, and I know one's been around that you've been with, the Amrita Sangha, and it's just kind of, it's more focusing on yogic meditation, yogic path, which is a lot more than what most people would think.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, yeah. You know, most people, well, I was trained as a yoga meditation teacher. I'm revealing something about my age, but back in the late 1970s, and I was actually living in Birmingham, Alabama, and, you know, people had barely heard of yogurt, much less yoga at the time. And today, many years later, like 40 years later, still a lot of people think that yoga is basically physical exercises. People go to yoga class and they do the yoga asanas, which, you know, are fantastic. But yoga is much deeper. Yoga actually means union, and it's a union of all the parts of ourselves and union with nature and with the cosmos fundamentally. And anyway, asanas, the yoga postures, are just one part of yoga. There's I won't say deeper, but, you know, other kind of more spiritually oriented aspects of yoga, which involves meditation, which involves use of mantras. You can use a mantra to meditate. At the Amrita Sangha, Amrita is just a word. It's kind of another word for unconditioned joy. Amrita just means nectar. And so our meditation group meets on Wednesday evenings at 7:00 at the Unitarian Church. And it's a really fun space. We often do some singing, some chanting. Last night we had a great guy come who brought a harmonium, which is kind of like a portable organ that's used in India a lot. And this is a wonderful young guy who's a Ashtanga yoga teacher. And my wife came and she led us in some asanas. Jennifer Siner, she got certified as a yoga teacher last year. And so we often do some chanting, we do some yoga postures, we do some meditation, and then we usually have a kind of talk or sharing. And it's a great space, wonderful people come. So if you're interested in meditating with a group, which somehow it's another mysterious thing, we don't really know why, but it seems that when you meditate with a group of people, the meditation is stronger, goes deeper, very naturally. So please come if you're interested, Wednesday nights at 7:00 at the Unitarian Church to the Amrita Sangha, which is a yoga meditation group.
Yeah, so folks, that's another great place to either learn, or if you already have a practice, supports that practice, that community, a group of others. As Michael just mentioned, it's powerful meditating with others. And so, you know, it's your mind, it's your life, it's your well-being. It's completely up to you. That's just one option. You can check out the local sangha here to learn different techniques of meditation, different paths, and what the different yogas really mean. So that's really neat that we have those resources here. And if you ever want any more information, you can email usumeditationclub@gmail.com. There's also, I've mentioned before, we're kind of getting down to the wire. I know when I started mentioning the retreat that's coming up this summer, most people were like, wow, that's so long a ways. Why announce that already? I'll think about it. But you know, it's July 31st. It's coming up. It's, I think, two more weekends. And so it's a wonderful opportunity. It's a residential, so you stay at the place. It's a paradise campground. It's just south of Logan, of the valley. And there's an option to camp in a tent, or there's lodgings, meals provided, and all that is included in the cost for the facilities and to bring the teacher here. But Susie Harrington and Alexis Santos, two wonderful teachers. Susie Harrington is very approachable for beginners, advanced. If that sounds interesting to you, it's a wonderful opportunity to check that out if you'd like. Again, it's July 31st. There's a three-day option till August 2nd. So the three-day option is over the weekend, July 31st to August 2nd. Or you can stay on for 6 days till August 5th. And you can register at desertdharma.org. That's DESERTDHARMA.org. Or inquire again at the USU Meditation Club at Gmail email. And if that sounds interesting, you want to start a practice or support, another wonderful option if you wanted to. It's that retreat coming up, the other sanghas, different yoga practitioners.
When does the student meditation group start meeting again?
The student meditation will be in the fall. So as soon as classes start, we'll be able to schedule a room just like everybody else once the semester begins. So we'll be starting right back up as soon as school's up and going again.
Great.
So in the fall, you don't even have to go anywhere. You'll already be on campus. You can check that out if you'd like as well. We will be here on the air for those that want to check it out. Our podcast, these sessions are podcasted, and you can check out on Aggie Radio just on there. Main page, you can go to Aggie Radio, and then under shows has all the podcast shows. This is Mindfulness on Air. You can check out any that you may have missed or want to listen to again. I know I always do, because what these very wonderful, enlightening guests, their insights and wisdoms that they bring to the show are well worth checking out. Or if you know anybody that's interested, there's all those options as well. So I just want to thank you once again, Michael, for being here and sharing your wisdom and your presence.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's great to talk to you, Jake.
And so, folks, we'll just take a quick moment to just kind of allow some of this to soak in, to percolate, to really feel connected. An invitation to get to know yourself, to be present with your life, to try out just a little bit of curiosity, what this is all about. Just one basic practice that we like to do. We can start out with being aware of what's happening right now around us. Maybe notice what you're seeing. Not worrying about labeling it or judging it good or bad. Just noticing what's happening. Maybe you can hear birds chirping or people talking, traffic or a fan. Maybe you're writing or typing on your keyboard. Just bring your awareness to what's happening around you, what's happening within. Notice if you're hunching over, studying, or working, clenching your jaw. Just bring awareness to what is happening. You don't have to stop what you're doing. Just notice where you might be holding some tension. And feel the breath enter in, expanding the lungs. And if you can, on an exhale, releasing some of the tension, any stress you've carried from the day, whatever has happened today, whatever you think might happen, just for a moment, set that down. And just be with what is really happening right now. The felt quality as you release on an out-breath. Just letting go. Feeling the healing energy of the breath, releasing the toxins as you breathe out. Bringing awareness to the palms. Notice any tension or the sensations there. Just the felt quality from the inside out. What does it feel like to have hands? Not thinking about it, but if your mind was actually located in your hands, what does it feel like? And just release any tension. Bringing our awareness to the belly, allow that to soften, relaxing, and also our shoulders. Feel the tension or whatever we feel there. Release them, exhaling down and back, breathing through your shoulders. Feeling your palms, your belly, your shoulders all relax, soften. And just take a few moments to just be with what is happening. There's no correct experience, it's just to notice what is going on for you. Let's see what it's like when we inhabit this body. Become aware of what's happening. And this we can always do. This is an invitation to bring this awareness, this presence to whatever you're doing. Whether working or talking with others, sending emails, even driving, we can bring this awareness, relaxing the palms, our belly, and our shoulders. Seeing clearly what is happening and being with that. See if we can open to that a little bit. And what would it be like to allow life to flow through us, just like the breath? And as always, know that this space is within you. It's not some special instructions or a special place or locked up in one person. The depth to your being is there for you to explore. All we have to do is be aware and open to it and see what that's like compared to the rest of our experience. So I'd like to thank everybody for listening, tuning in. Once again, you're listening to Aggie Radio. I'm Jake Grossman. This was Mindfulness on Air. Everybody, stay mindful. Have a safe and enjoy your weekend. Until next time, have a good one.